Saturday View on Midlands 103. With thanks to Lumcloon Energy, pioneering innovation, powering progress. Lumcloonenergy.com. Have your say. Call 0818 300 103. Text or WhatsApp your Saturday View to 083 3010 103.
Hello and a very good morning to you and on Saturday View. Ronan Berry here with you, and a bit of a jam-packed show coming up again for you this morning. We're going to look at Mother's Day, ideal gifting, and I'd love to know what you'd love to get for Mother's Day. And maybe if you want to be a little bit cheeky and tell me what you'd love to get, but what you're probably likely to get on the other hand, could be very interesting as well. Is it something that you celebrate? Is it something that your family just pass over and say, look, this is another day in the week as well? Or what's that one thing that you would love to get on Mother's Day or that you'd love to get for your mother? Let me know. 083 3010 103, the text and WhatsApp number, or you can call us on 0818 300 103. I will, of course, be looking at the referendum from yesterday too, both referenda that were voted upon, and look at what voter turnout has been like both here in the Midlands and get a bit of a national perspective on that also. It looked like yesterday morning we were going to have a record low, and even at early stages of voting we were looking at numbers of around 9-10% in some constituencies. However, that seemed to grow throughout the afternoon, and then later last night there was reports of quite strong turnout in some sections of the country. Overall though, apparently it's still looking at sort of like between 30-50%, which if it was at 30% wouldn't be the lowest turnout ever, but it's still quite low for a modern day democracy in a country where you're allowed to use your vote. You know, again, it begs that question, why is voter turnout so low? I'd love to know your opinion on that too. So please let me know if you voted or if you didn't vote, maybe why you didn't vote. What was the primary reason for that? Were you just not interested? Was it just you couldn't make your mind up on which way you wanted to vote on it? Or do you just not bother doing it? Let me know again by text or WhatsApp if you can, or even better, come on and talk to me on the show as well. Because one listener has texted in already to say and asked a question, why is there pencils tied on strings at the polling stations for voting as well? I'm not really sure where you're going with that one. I mean, there's always been pencils generally at the voting station. So if that person is still listening, either gives an update on quite exactly you're looking for an inquiring there, and maybe if you want to come on and talk to me about your concerns on that, I'd love to hear from you too. 0818 300 103. You'll get through to Nelly here in the station. But before that, continuing slightly on the theme from last week, which was looking at what local towns and villages are doing, you know, to step up and to look at things like the loss of young people from an area, maybe moving off and through migration or emigration, looking at what's happening with vacant buildings. You know, again, so many towns and villages around the area, we're seeing the pubs are closing down. We're seeing maybe community halls not being overly well utilised because there isn't that many people around. Or is it a case sometimes where there's people there, but actually giving them stuff to do and providing resources is maybe where the big challenge is? Well, the latest village and town to start looking into this is Rosenallis. I'm delighted to be joined by Brian Farrell. And Brian is a very newly elected chairman of a very new group called Rosenallis Revival. Very good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Ron. Thank you for having me on the show.
I suppose, Brian, the obvious question to start is, what propelled the people of Rosenallis to sit up and say, let's try and do something?
Okay. So I suppose...
Just come into me a bit there.
Okay. From a personal perspective, I suppose I was just kind of... sick of looking at the village the way it was. It's kind of soul destroying to pass through it and see it, no life, especially at night time. There's no lights, there's no businesses open, there's no people walking, there's no community spirit. We have a community centre, we have a GA club, we have a soccer pitch, we have two churches, but we don't have anything else. We don't have people learning. I think when people say community, you know, I think they forget the unity. We don't have that in our parish, and a lot of rural Ireland don't. And it's just, it's very hard to see and watch rural Ireland waste and being allowed to fade away by, I don't know, the powers that be or multinationals or whatever. I just think it's heartbreaking.
Can you dig deeper? What do you think as the primary drivers of that?
The primary drivers? I think local authorities and government at a national level allowed bigger corporations to come into our country and give them great deals and everything else. And to be fair, yes, great jobs, but them jobs aren't in rural Ireland. They're in the big cities and we're forgotten about. And if you want a nice job, you want a nice house, a nice mortgage, you have to go to Dublin, Cork, Limerick, Waterford, Galway, wherever. You have to commute. That's fine. You're in a lovely city, wherever else. You have to come home. You're spending a huge part of your salary on a lovely home, a lovely car to get there. When you come home in the evening, you only have a very small amount of time with your loved ones. In my mind, that's not fair. It's not acceptable in this day and age. We need to put funding and effort and passion and drive back into our local communities.
When you mention things like multinationals and the need to commute, and I know County Leash in particular, the Leash Chamber Alliance have been very at the fore of promoting like how many people actually leave the county every day, and some of their strategies are try to, you know, create facilities for those people who maybe could work from the county for a few days a week, or at least see how they could attract those people to go and look for jobs in County Leash. Are there opportunities for a place like Rosenallis to look at creating remote working space, or is that just too much of, is that not really feasible, do you think?
Of course it's feasible. We just need the backing of the local authorities and local government to help us achieve them goals. Why not? That's the question I'll ask. Why not? People want to do that. Of course they do. But I suppose they're met with an iron fist. And we have a lovely community centre in Rosenallis. We have fibre broadband right outside the door. Why don't we have it? I don't know. I don't know the answer.
Is there enough people? I mean, I think the last census, the population was put down around 440 or 50 people. Would there be the footfall there, do you think? Or would it even attract people to come?
I think it's 1,100. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Of course, we have people from all different diversities living in our parish. And, you know, there's no outlet. If you're involved in the GAA and soccer, that's great, but there's no other outlet. You know, we have Pilates for retired ladies, I think, in the retirement group. But aside that, we have a community centre. Some people think it's been utilised to a good standard. It's absolutely not. I personally would like to create a little hub in Rosenallis with a nice little niche name. We don't know yet, but we have we're working on a schedule. You know, we have a guy there, he's looking to do yoga. We have another girl, she works with children with acquired brain injury. She's looking to have a sensory club. We have a guy looking to do his chess club. We have another lady looking to do flower arranging. And, you know, I know another guy, I haven't broached it with him yet, but I think we're to set up a little men's shed or some kind of a little men's shed or something like that where they can come together. Doesn't have to be in a men's shed. Anyone can get involved. Make little bird houses, bird feeders. Make them and get the children to come in and paint them. The local schools, Rosenallis School, Dernamogue School, they can come in and paint the bird houses and we can put them up together at the weekends and watch our little village flourish.
You've lived away, you lived in Abbey Leaks for a period
Mount
of time. Or Mount Rath, apologies.
Yes, for 18 years, yes.
Take us through the street in Rosenallis now. What does it look like and how has it changed over the years?
How has it changed over the years? Back in the 90s, Rosenallis was a thriving little community. We had a shop, we had two pubs, we had a good youth club, and it just after falling by the wayside. And reasons, I don't know. I suppose the downturn wasn't a help. People emigrated, like any rural community. But I think, personally, the efforts weren't put in there by the local representatives and the local authorities to keep the people and to keep the parishes thriving.
But you've come together as a group now to kind of stand up and attempt to take action. Did it take long to get...
No. I approached our local PP, Father Welch, a fortnight ago. I said, Father, you know, I'm back living in Rosenallis now and I think things need to change. So I'm thinking of forming a revival committee. And straight away, yes, we need it. There was no resistance from his side. And within 48 hours, we had great support and we had a meeting and we have a board. I'm the chair. And, you know, a lot of good things have happened in the last 2 weeks. A lot of good things have happened. And it's great to see it. And this morning now we're having a clean-up from 10 a.m. I should be there and I'd probably say, where's that fella now? He's organising this clean-up and he's not doing his job. But anyway, we're organising a clean-up and people have donated cherry pickers and power washers and, you know, people are up there now with their high vises on and they're sweeping and, you know, it's great. It's great to see community spirit. And people have been buzzing all week. Personally, I've opened a little coffee trailer in the village last Saturday morning and with the intention of just opening it Saturday and Sunday and see how it goes. But straight away, you open it on Monday morning. So we're open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m.
And you call that Lily's, is it? Lily's Coffee?
Lily's Coffee. I have a daughter, Lily. She's she'll be 3 now on the 28th of October. So she was my inspiration behind the name. So Lily's Coffee is going to be a non-profit organisation. It's going to be for our rural scheme in Rosenallis is going to get 20% net profits from Lily's Coffee. I do have a business partner, and my share of the business would be going to a fund for my daughter. But outside of that, I would love to create this as a franchise and roll it across rural Ireland as a non-profit organisation to help disadvantaged people socially, physically, mentally, anyone that's down in their luck, to come in, have a little job, have their few hours, have a little rota with other people, students, retired people, whatever. Get involved in their local communities, get a place buzzing again, and revive their communities.
So you're already extending the opening hours then, based
have,
on
yes.
that's good going after a couple of weeks.
One week.
Yeah, so it's good. What is it as well? I mean, obviously, right, you know, you're going to say this great coffee, but what else is it? Is it providing that little kind of focal point, a little social point for people too?
Do you know what? It's really heartwarming, because I genuinely didn't see where it was going to go. I just had this idea in my head that if I do something, you know, hopefully I'll be met with open arms and open hearts and open minds, and I have been. So I have Pamela comes in at 8 a.m. until 3 p.m. and then I go myself for a couple of hours. Then we have Aoife comes in after school. She's a local student in Mount Melly. And then we have another girl coming on board next week, Amy. She's a student as well. And we have a Polish girl. She's a barista. She's coming from 12 o'clock till 7 p.m. And another girl as well. So it's about creating, a few bob in their pocket. Aoife just said this morning, I'm saving up now for my driving lessons and stuff like that. And it's great that I'm not going to Port Leash. I don't have Mammy and Daddy driving to Port Leash and collecting me in the evening time. It's great that I'm 2 minutes up the road. If I want to bring my bike in the summertime, I can bring my bike. And I just thought, you know what, isn't that lovely and beautiful? And the people that are coming back every morning for a coffee now, will you be here tomorrow? You know, it's great. And we have a local girl, she's doing the baking, Niamh McAvoy. She's brilliant, she's fantastic. We've kind of created a lovely little menu. And then with Cafe Latte in Port Leash, they're making the sandwiches for me, and I've actually designed one myself. And we have our local milkman, Sean Connolly, he's delivering the milk. And it's just great, and it's heartwarming to see. And my own sister's making a few bits and pieces, and a couple of local women retired, just bringing their stuff. And I said, lady, look, I want to pay you for it. No, it's great to see it. It's just so heartwarming, the people coming back every morning, you know, appreciating your efforts and everything else. But from a personal perspective, it's not, there's no financial gain, as I said, and it's just to see the people reaching out and the smiles on the face and the conversations and the waves and blowing the horn going by and, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting, because it could even just be a reason for somebody to drive through the village, you know, or to to walk in. Maybe they weren't expecting that, just to meet people and just to say hello to somebody too. You mentioned at the start, though, that it's the unity part of community. The examples you've just given us there of people like offering you baked goods, because they know ultimately some of the proceeds will go towards Rosenallis revival. It shows there's traction there. People are happy.
Yeah.
What's the big ask then? Who do you need to step up now and come and say, listen, we want to get behind this as well? What's next for Rosenallis revival? Is it looking at potential sources of funding? Is it looking at councils? Is it looking at EU funding? Where do you take it from here, do you think? I know it's early days yet.
Yeah, of course it's very early days, and look, there's a lot of irons in the fire. I suppose I had a conversation with Leash County Council yesterday. They're having a meeting on Monday, looking for support and investment. These things take time. Possibly someone to come in privately and help us out. You know, as I said, I'd like to see Lily's Coffee as a franchise. And, you know, Leash County Council have said that, you know, there is good grants available. These grants are great and they sound great and everything else. They're tricky. There's a lot of paperwork. There's a lot of development plans needed and infrastructure put in place before you even start. So it's fine. Look, we're not looking for straight away, but we're getting the ball rolling. We're looking for a 10-year plan, realistically. Leash County Council have said to us that we're looking for a heritage museum. We have the local Quakers in Rosenallis, a local cemetery. We're looking for lighting and footpaths and local amenities. There's no point in inviting people to come if there's nothing there to come to. So from a personal point of view, I'm involved in the coffee industry. My dream would be to have a coffee roasting business in Rosin Alice tied in with Laois County Council and local partnerships and create local jobs, and to have this coffee roastery going, a little coffee shop, a pub, a restaurant. People say this lad's crazy, it's Rosin Alice. We are in the heart of the Sleeve Blooms. There's huge investments available. Myself and a colleague have been helping a local couple with a glamping application. So it's at very early stages. We have a kind of a clear picture of what we want in our minds for it. And there's a local couple, they live in Glenbarrow. And they have a young family, and Mark and Roisin, lovely people. So they have a couple of acres beside their home, and they wanted to develop it into a glamping area. That they had a 10-year plan going forward. I suppose this kind of kick-started them and said, maybe we can do something. So there is grants available up to €300,000 for them, but it's a very sensitive area and they need to do it in the right way, obviously. So myself and this other fella, we're trying to help them with this application. And we are, and we have support from Laois County Council on it. So that's another thing to be excited about. And, you know,
absolutely,
already the word is out there that Rosin Alice is open for business, and we are, and we want people, whether you are in local government, in local office, you are a retired person, you want to get involved, you have a legal background or accounting background, come and talk to me or talk to the committee and we'll give the details. The details will be there, but I'll push it further out. If you know, all this funding and everything is lovely from local authorities, it takes time. If you have big pockets, a kind heart, an open mind, and if you'd like to get involved in something bigger than Rosin Alice in rural Ireland, come and talk to us and try and help us revive our little country, because it's a beautiful country. And I think, genuinely think, people, since COVID especially, they don't want to go abroad. They want to stay in their local amenities and their local areas. And we have that in the Sleeve Blooms. It's the biggest natural park we have in this country. It's beautiful and it's sensitive, but there's 21 walkways in the Sleeve Blooms. There's actually 27, but you can walk from Glenbarrow Car Park all over up to the Ridge of Capard, to the Cut, Clonisley, Kinnity, Mount Rat, all these areas. And we need to utilise that, and we need to restore community spirit in our little villages and towns.
Well, sounds like you're making the right moves too. I think it'd be remiss not to mention things like the Just Transition Fund as well. And I mean, Laois has a tourism activator there in Regina Dunn, and always worth reaching out to for projects of that nature. Yeah. But I think last week's show, when we spoke to people from Eglish Drumcullen, Mount Mellick local, or Mount Mellick Development Association, and from Forban too, showed that actually the first step is the community, number one, getting together, deciding to take action and starting that process. Well, you most definitely have done that. Definitely. And all I can say is I wish you the very best on that. And it sounds like there's going to be lots of exciting stories coming from Rosin Alice over the years.
I hope so.
Brian, thank you so much for coming this morning as well. That's Brian.
Thank
I suppose
you.
If you want to catch out his business, there is at Lily May's, at Lily's Coffee Rosin Alice, and you'll also find them at Rosin Alice Revival there all across social media and stuff like that. Time now for a quick break. After that, we're going to look at the results, well, not the results, but the turnout from yesterday's election, what we know both locally, what the picture looks like nationally as well, and maybe discuss how will that impact on the potential outcome of it. I'll also get back to some of your texts that are coming in around why the voter turnout may have been low, and that issue of why was there pencils in the voting stations, why were they tied down? Some listeners have suggested what they think is going on there, so I'll bring you all that very, very shortly.
Saturday View on Midlands 183, with thanks to Lumcloon Energy, pioneering innovation, powering progress. LumcloonEnergy.com.
The texter who, or the listener who got in touch earlier and asked about why were the pencils tied with strings in the polling station? Indeed, why were there pencils? I say, in my own view, I've always found it, think it's always been a pencil, but some people are suggesting that it should be pens. And I've asked you to kind of text me in and say, well, is that something that came to your attention? Are you concerned about it? If so, why? Or why do you think there's pencils and why are they tied with strings? Well, somebody has said that I thought pencils in the voting booths was strange too. First thing that came to mind was that my vote could be erased and changed. There should have been pens in the booths. I just do not trust our government. That comes in there from Nolan in Laois. Now, surely we don't expect that to happen. I mean, we don't live in a country where there's a dictator in place and where votes are counted, but they actually just give out a result. Like, it's not North Korea we live in. Do people genuinely think that's a concern? I wouldn't have thought so. I mean, we're a very democratic country as well. Your vote is your vote. Of course, the the most important thing is to actually get out and use your vote in the first place. So at least the people who are commenting on this were obviously in the polling stations yesterday. So again, if you didn't vote yesterday, I'd also love to know why you didn't vote as well. People are highlighting an issue of the electoral register not being updated. Some people suggest, and one listener says that their vote wasn't transferred from Oranmore to Tullamore, but and also that he doesn't understand what we were voting for in the first place too. So very complicated. But Councillor Angus Rourke in Athlone actually raised that issue on the voting register last week. It was reported in the Westmead Independent that he was expecting or predicting that the Athlone voting register is totally out of date and it's only about 60% accurate, and that translates to a lot of votes. And that's based on his own experience canvassing ahead of the local elections that will take place later this year. And he's saying that in some instances there, you're going to houses that were rented out over the years, and there may in fact be 8 or 10 people's names down or, you know, voted, registered to vote at that address, but they don't live there anymore. So, but again, I think a lot of this unfortunately comes back to the individual. We have to look after our own vote and make sure that it is transferred. And is it checktheregister.ie? And it's there. I've never been on the website, I'll be honest with you. My voting card always arrives. But if you notice any anomalies, that apparently is the place to go and make sure your details are up to date. So again, that issue of maybe the electoral register being slightly out of date could also be some of the explanation for the voters being potentially low as well. Again, on that thing of pens, people are saying that, you know, that they didn't have a pen with them. They don't ever remember pencils in the boots before. Somebody else texts in now back to why they didn't vote. Said, I didn't vote because I didn't understand it. So the question there really is, was turnout low yesterday? It was widely anticipated during the week that we would have an extremely low turnout, and early stages yesterday morning it looked like that was definitely going to be the case. Things though may have changed in the early afternoon, so to get a sense of what it looks like and what maybe turnout was like across the Midlands, I'm delighted to be joined by journalist Garrod Keegan. And I suppose my first question to Garrod is, are you going to keep up the comedy career, Garrod, or was it a one night wonder?
That's a really good question. I mean, I'm very tempted to say on air what I said to you earlier in the WhatsApp message, but
well,
I'll leave that up to you.
I think we're going to see plenty of jokes and memes like that over the coming days, depending on what happens this evening. But I suppose, Garrod, back to the more important issues, turnout across the Midlands, County Offaly and stuff, what has it been like based on what we know so far?
Yeah, I think it's higher than was expected. I think, you know, you made a comment there just a few seconds ago about people saying they didn't vote because they didn't understand it, you know, and I think that's a fair comment. I think people didn't understand what this was about. And maybe that really points to, you have to ask yourself, why didn't people understand it? I think they didn't understand it because it wasn't a clear-cut yes or no. The proposals which people were being asked to vote on were not clear-cut. As I say, durable relationship was the big one. You know, what does that really mean? Should we put a vague term like that into something like the Constitution, which somebody already said to me this morning is, the Constitution, above all things, should have clear language in it, you know, which is understandable to the ordinary person, and you shouldn't have to refer to the courts, you know, refer the language in it to the courts. But apart from that, yeah, turnout was not as low as expected. I remember about a month ago, Boyle Sports opened a book on would this be the lowest turnout in the history, in an election or referendum in the history of the Irish state. The lowest was something like 20-something% in one particular referendum. This one will be more than double that, it looks like. Certainly here in Offaly, I was tracking it yesterday. It looked very poor early on in the day, but I mean, it did pick up as the day went on. By last night, in one polling booth, which is Kilmorey Hall, which is for the Ballycommon area in the Edenderry electoral area, it was 54%. Now there's 490 people in the register there and 265 voted. But, you know, it may have gone above 50 in other places. I know in one of the ballot boxes in Tullamore, in the town in St. Joseph's School, it was 49% by certainly before 8 p.m, you know, with 2 hours to go, you know. So it's hard to know. It varied across the county. There's 3 ballot boxes in the National School there in Kilcormac, and it was 39% by 8:20 p.m. You know, so turnout was high and high-ish and low in various places. I mean, people have to remember that the turnout, you know, people think that 100%. Some people think that everybody who's in the register should vote. The high 60s is a high turnout in Ireland. and general elections are the ones that always have the highest turnout. The low 70s would be the highest I've ever come across, you know, in a general election. So I think it boils down to whether people, number one, have an interest in the thing, and number two, do they understand it? Did they have an interest in this? I think if anybody, if you said to anybody a couple of years ago, do you have a major interest in the definition of the family in the Constitution, they would kind of look at you and say, God, what's this fella all about? And the same might have been a bit more interesting when you remind people that there was a reference to woman and mother in the Constitution. That their ears might have picked up a little bit. But as to come up with a form of words to replace and make changes, that was the trick. I'm not sure whether the Electoral Commission or the government, if you want to put it that way, pulled it off, you know. Gearing indications from the council that it might be a no-no, and I think that will be a reflection of the general kind of
It looks at present like
misunderstanding, but confusion about what the whole thing is all about.
Yeah, I suppose the other option the government would have had would be to try to, you know, append it on to another election, like the local elections they're doing on the day when there was other votes on as well. Would that have been an option, do you think? And would that have raised as much questions and maybe and debate around it?
Governments traditionally shy away from that kind of thing because, you know, on certain issues, voters like to give government a slap. You know, the proposal to abolish Shannon would be a good example in the last Fine Gael-led government, where it was voted down. And that governments don't like to confuse the poor old voter too much, you know. So say if we come to June 7 and we have the local and European election, and if we tagged in these two referendum questions as well, the government would take the view, okay, are we putting something in front of our supporters here that they actually don't like, and might that put them off giving our party the number one in the council election and the European election? So I can understand totally. I wasn't a bit surprised that this was separated out from the other two elections coming up in June.
Any sense from being out on the ground there yesterday or even this morning that with where the turnout is likely to be, whether that would potentially help and assist the government and the opposition parties who've called for a yes, yes, or whether it could actually go against them?
I couldn't pick up. A long time ago, I've given up predicting the results of referendums based on my tours of polling stations on polling day because I've got it wrong, basically, you know. there's often a sense that sometimes the people who speak up about things, you know, are the most vocal people, but sometimes they're in the minority, and that's why they're most vocal. So I actually don't know. Having said that, all I can say is I wouldn't be surprised if it was a no to one or both of these proposals. I think you're asking me, the government, I think you asked me what their view would be. What my view is that I don't think the government's heart was really in either of these two proposals, you know. Listen to interviews from Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar, you know, who have a duty, to use that word, which is applied to mothers in the Constitution, to campaign for these things. I don't think their hearts is really in it. I think that they agreed to these two proposals in their various original draft proposals for a programme for government. They worked their way into Dáil's, they kicked them on to the Citizens' Assembly, they long-fingered them as long as possible, but eventually they come back, and there's no avoiding that they were going to put them to people, which they did. I'm not sure. I'd say if we were to have it all over again, they would have said, "Nah,
and that was actually kind of an accusation, almost labelled by Pippa Hackett there recently, that she was really the only elected official in the county in terms of you know, at national level, to be actually campaigning and actively campaigning for a yes, yes, and she levelled criticism at other local TDs on that. So
you mentioned Barry Cowan, yeah,
absolutely, yeah.
You mentioned Barry Cowan is the government TD who did not campaign as such at all, and obviously she had to go at the only public opponent on the other side, who is Carol Nolan, who was urging no-no and gave a list of reasons for that. So I wasn't a bit surprised. I suppose the Greens have a tradition, if you want to call it that, of actually sticking to their principles and their word, you know, and they often get bashed for that when they actually deliver on the promise, when they make a promise to maybe bring in regulations to cut down on solid fuel to help the environment, and they actually deliver on them to get bashed.
Absolutely, yeah, that's it. I suppose the interesting thing is there's further referendums coming this year, even around things like intellectual property rights and patents as well, which highly important from a business and development in the country, but how it's going to catch the national interest is going to be a bigger question. But thanks a million for that, Garrod.
I think the question is, you know, if, that's a good one you put it, a very technical thing. I think what people are going to be saying to themselves now, like, what is our constitution really for, you know? And do we need, does it need to go into this level of detail and about these this many issues, you know? And that's sort of what I think is a turn off, was my opinion, was a turn off for some people this time around.
Absolutely, you know? Lessons to be learned, I think, at all levels. Garrod Keegan, thank you so much for that this morning. Garrod, of course, is a journalist here from the Midlands. I'd like to bring into the conversation Tadhg McNally's political reporter with the Irish Examiner. A very good morning, Tadhg.
Good morning.
Tadhg, what is the picture looking like, I suppose, up around Dublin and even nationally in terms of turnout in the first place?
Well, I suppose for turnout, it really just depends on where you are looking, I suppose, for turnout. So in Dublin, in some parts of the city, we were looking at a decent turnout, you know, particularly in some parts of South Dublin, we were seeing where, you know, getting up to 40%, you know, especially comparing. Well, I suppose the problem is comparing this with previous referendums we had, you know, most recently, maybe the repeal of the 8th, you know, where we had, I think it was 63% turnout in the end. It's not going to be anything like that. We're looking up to, you know, maybe, you know, nationwide, maybe mid-30s, you know, early, you know, mid-30s, the early 40s on this one. But yeah, in Dublin, we saw, you know, some parts of South Dublin hitting 40%, up to 46% in some places. In Cork, we were part of the city centre, was hitting up to 50%, whereas out in Cork County, we were looking around, you know, maybe 35, 36% across the rest of the county. In other parts of the country, we're looking at, like, you know, Clare, Kerry, and Tip. Maybe at around 8 p.m. last night, we were around 40% there. Yeah, but in Dublin, it really did just depend on the area. You know, some of the more working class areas didn't turn out as much. Some of the more affluent areas might have turned out a bit more. But again, like looking at the initial tallies that are coming in, we're seeing coming in from tally people all across the country. It is looking like it is going to be an emphatic no-no for the family. An emphatic no for the CARE referendum, and maybe a less emphatic no for the referendum on the family. This is likely to be incredibly, incredibly embarrassing for the government. It's not going to be a good result for them. You know, they were expecting, you know, if there was any, you know, they were expecting, you know, potentially just the CARE referendum to fall. I spoke to a minister on Thursday or Wednesday, I believe, and they were pretty downtrodden about the whole thing. They would believe it was a no-no, but I think there were sort of more senior sources who were hoping that this would carry, at least one of them would carry. But initial tallies, we're still going to have to wait a bit longer to get, you know, to get more concrete results. We're getting very low amount of boxes are open, but of the boxes that have been opened so far, it's a pretty strong showing for the no side.
And you mentioned their, like, turnouts potentially, say, at 35%, even up into the low 40s, significantly higher than would have been anticipated, even right up to, you know, yesterday morning or Thursday night. Obviously, the people then who were either confused by it or didn't want these proposals, these changes, they got out and they went voting then, by what you're saying.
Absolutely. Well, that seems to be the case anyway. I mean, like, I was sort of surprised yesterday. I was keeping an eye on the turnout across the country, and it was very, very low in the early days. Like, I mean, usually you might have a bit of a rush in the morning when the polling stations initially open, you know, people heading off to work, they might stop in and cast their ballot before they head to work, whereas a lot of people did seem to turn out quite late in the evening. So between, you know, 7, 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock, that's when a lot of the ballots were cast by people. So rather than before work, people came out after work. But yeah, it seems, you know, that a lot of people, I think the problem with these two referendums were that they are quite complex in nature. They're quite esoteric. There's, like, it's unlike something like the repeal of the 8th or marriage equality, where, you know, if you're voting in favour or you're voting against, you can have a very real tangible, tangible, you know, conclusion when you finish voting. Like, you know, compared to something like this, you know, most people will probably not see any direct benefits from particularly the family amendment, considering a lot of that stuff is already baked into legislation. So, you know, single parents are single parent families are classed as families under legislation. They're just not classed within the constitution. So yeah, I think there might have been, you know, a significant uptick last night of people who, you know, didn't really know what this meant, or potentially, you know, even apathetic towards it or disagreed with the sentiment of the referendum. So they did come out in the end to vote no. But again, we're likely to have to wait a bit longer until we get the official results. We're likely to see the first referendum to be announced will be the family referendum. We're likely to see that around lunchtime this afternoon before the care referendum is announced later on this evening. It's unlikely that that any of these counts will be done before the rugby kicks off later on this afternoon. So I think poll workers might be a little bit disappointed that they won't get out early for that.
Yeah, undoubtedly there's going to be, I can imagine, big crowds will gather at Dublin Castle too, and there'll be a lot of focus on particularly the sitting government at the minute to see what the results does for them. And based on what you just said there, it could potentially be embarrassment as well. And lots of people texting us this morning saying they went out and they voted no, and a lot of the reason being that they didn't really fully understand what it was. And I think you know, what seemed to be initially quite a simple change possibly got lost in multiple different definitions. You know, you can throw misinformation into that. I mean, there's misinformation probably on both sides too. I think it has brought a lot of complexity and ambiguity to it, and by all accounts results may just show that as well. Tadhg, enjoy the rest of your day, enjoy the count and the announce later on, and of course the rugby if you get a chance. But thank you for taking time out this morning as well. That's Tadhg McNally, their political reporter with the Irish Examiner. So I'm going to get back to some of your text there around that very topic as well. Councillor Mick Dollard from Westmead rang in to say that the register machines are incorrect. He was dealing with them for 30 years and he knows that they are only guessing. They do not know what the turnout was. Interesting point, Mick. You might expand on that for us as well. Somebody else has said, I don't understand why those referendums are not held on Saturday, Sunday, instead of closing schools on weekdays. Yeah, because we still do that, close the national schools, gives everybody a bit of a day off. I know actually in some places there was confirmation on yesterday, so the style from some of the voters turning out in places like Killy and different places was apparently through the roof and never been seen before. Other people are texting in saying it's a shame that people just couldn't be bothered to come out and vote. Irish men and women went through hell on earth for us all to be able to exercise our right to vote. It wasn't rocket science, RE, the changes where we were voting. The constitution was yes or no. There was plenty of information for both sides on the wording. Listening to silly comments on pencils tied by strings would make you wonder why are we becoming like Trump supporters. Thank you for your text, Marie, there in Portlaoise. But actually, I'm surprised too. I put my hands up. There's loads of people texting in saying that they do not like the pencils in poll booths, that it should be pens. Somebody else's point that texting in is, well, actually, the pens could just stop working. The ink might dry up on them, so a pencil is much more efficient. I've always found it's been a pencil. I've never had an issue with it, but clearly it's an issue that some people have. But again, is it really an issue with the pencil, or is it harping at something deeper at play there in terms of just a dissatisfaction or a sense of discontent as well? Keep coming in. One texter has texted me to remind me that, remember, Pippa Hackett wasn't elected by the public, and very little people class her as an elected person. It was done internally. Interesting point. It was through the Shannon and then as a super junior minister as well. So anyway, thank you for your text. Keep them coming in there. We have a few minutes left. 083 3010 103 0818 300 103. Time for a quick break. After that, going to change the theme slightly and look at gifting and the ideal gift for somebody on Mother's Day, if it is something that you bother with. If not, tell me why. Or if there's an ideal gift that you would love as a mother to get tomorrow, what would it be? Let me know.
Saturday View on Midlands 183 with thanks to Lumclune Energy, pioneering innovation, powering progress. LumclunEnergy.com.
Tomorrow, of course, marks Mother's Day, an event where many people are probably scrambling today trying to get that ideal gift as well and pick up something. But before we just touch on what you could pick up for a special mother in your life, think of the what's happening tomorrow night, the Oscars, and hopefully we could see a huge Irish win there with Cillian Murphy. But the famous goodie bags that are given out to nominees in the Oscars, the value of it this year is six-figure sum, and it's predicted to be, or estimated to be, in the region of €156,000 worth of gifts, including food, sleeping aids, and trip to Switzerland. Some of the food includes raw, dehydrated superfood from organic Canadian brand Smack. Dogs will be allowed to learn that for each recipient of the goodie bag, plant-based company VDog will donate 10,000 canine meals to PETA's Global Compassion Fund. As I say, trips to Swiss chalets, a holistic wellness retreat, 160 kilometres from Hollywood, and three nights in St. Bart's as well. Grooming and health items and accessories as well, including skincare, liver pills, topical and microneedling stuff, consumables that represent like bite-sized sugar-free, gluten free, sorry, cashew cookies, sugar-free cherry gummies. 156,000 euros worth of stuff for millionaires. That's absolutely crazy. Let's take it back to home. When it comes to getting a gift for your mother tomorrow, I'm delighted to be joined now by Rosie Bowles from Burgess in Athlone. It is the Midlands department store and the longest established department store in the country, first opening its doors in 1839. Very good morning, Rosie.
Good morning, Ronan.
Rosie, are trends changing over the years, and what is popular in 2024 when it comes to, I suppose, paying and getting that something special for the Irish mammy?
Do you know, I think the love language doesn't change. Spending time with her, giving her a hug, doing some of her chores, tell her what she means to you, and give her a thoughtful gift. So we have lots of things in store. Silk pillowcases that arrest wrinkles and keep her hair glossy. A beautiful range of handbags. We got in some lovely new jewellery this week. Pick up a piece of knitwear, some fun socks. You know your mum. You know what will appeal to her. But there was one lady in this week, and she filled those gaps, the five love language, if you like. She started off her day by doing a wardrobe weed with her mum, and she found there was pieces that her mum, beautiful pieces of clothing that her mum wasn't wearing because she'd nothing to match them. She put her daughter in the buggy and brought mum and daughter into Burgess, and picked out a few garments, and they had fun doing it and spent time together. And at the end, she went home with some beautiful pieces that were going to add to her wardrobe. So that kind of thing, I just thought it was lovely.
And it's still something clearly that people are you know, they really feel compelled to mark. But you said yourself, sometimes a good hug and a bit of time spent can be worth equally as much, if not more.
Exactly. We have a lovely range as well of china mugs that are made by a mother and daughter team in Dublin. And they have things on them, little quotes like busy being a mammy. So you bring them the tea and it's busy being a mammy. And, you know, just small things can mean so much.
Yeah, I don't know whether this counts, but for my wife, who's a mother of four kids, tomorrow I'm bringing the kids away for the day. We're going up to Dublin. So I hope that counts as a present and gets me off the hook anyway.
Absolutely, yeah.
Rosie, thanks for letting you back. I know it's a busy morning over there in Burgess, but thank you for that as always. And if people want to check them out,
thanks, Ronan.
The Burgess department store, like I say, first opens doors in 1839. What a fantastic story. And again, another great local business and great things happening there. Worth checking out as well. And thanks to Rosie for coming on this morning and letting us know about that. So if you haven't thought of it yet, guys, get out there and get that present for your mammy or for that other half or that person who deserves it on Mother's Day. I'm going to vacation here now and let Lorraine McCormack come in. She's here with Feel Good Saturday. Thank you for all your texts again today on all those topics, particularly around the referenda yesterday. Certainly has got a lot of your blood boiling. An interesting prediction there from Tadhg McNally with Irish Examiner about where the votes may go. We'll stay tuned across the day, and Midlands 103 will bring you the results as they come in. I'll talk to you all next week. Take care.
Saturday View, with thanks to Lumcloon Energy, pioneering innovation, powering progress. LumcloonEnergy.com. Midlands 103.